Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again.
Gavin keeps it. Skill on goal. Look at that pass. Hayden. Goal. Columbus.
There are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross and Dempsey's denied again. And Donovan has scored. Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
This is the beautiful game.
Oh, it's incredible!
Described by two uglies.
Stupendous!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
This is a thing of genius.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
Lots to get into today. The Columbus Crew have made a move, and it was a pretty, I don't know, I found it to be pretty interesting and shocking. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that.
Maybe bleak. I don't know.
Bleak is a word you could use, certainly. There's a lot of questions. We will try to answer some questions and ask a few of our own. That'll all come up a little bit later on in the show. We will also be talking about something that I don't think we've given enough attention to, and that is soccer players around the world who are playing through a pretty interesting set of circumstances that they've opted into, but it's a set of circumstances that I don't think we talk about enough when it comes to sports performance and all of that. So we'll touch on that story as well. But before we get to all that, of course, we've got Champions League to discuss.
My God.
Yes, we will get to that first and foremost. One of the greatest soccer games possibly ever played, or at least one of the most entertaining. We will talk about both Real Madrid and City versus, and then the Liverpool-Villarreal tilt as well. However, I think we have to start here. I guess a moment of silence maybe is in order for legendary soccer agent Mino Raiola, who is the agent for, among others, Paul Pogba, Erling Haaland, Romelu Lukaku. Like, I mean, this is one of the big movers and shakers in soccer. News breaking today that he passed away at the age of 54. So I guess we do the moment of silence, right, Beamer?
We could, but when we're recording this podcast, there might be a little problem with this because apparently he's still alive. Apparently Mino Raiola is sick. And he's got an illness, and right now, all the reports coming out that he has passed away are being refuted by him and his family. And again, I saw this an hour ago, and I'm like, oh, Mino Raiola passed away. Like, that's a shame, 54 years old. Like, hopefully family and everything's okay. And then in what is truly remarkable fashion, I see a tweet from Mino Raiola's account. And again, not sure if he's typing this, not sure if it's a family member, whoever represents him. Someone obviously has the ability to tweet from Mino Raiola's Twitter account. He said, current health status for the ones wondering, and this is again after the reports that he had died came out.
Right, right.
Current health status for the ones wondering, pissed off second time in 4 months they kill me, seem also able to resuscitate. So, I don't know what the hell is going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, it says seem also able to resuscitate. Like, are they saying, like, this is being translated, so the something's getting lost in translation possibly there. I also saw that Alberto Zangrillo, who is the head of anesthesia and intensive care unit at the San Rafael Hospital in Milan, said, I am outraged by the phone calls from pseudo-journalists who speculate on the life of a man who is fighting. So apparently he isn't in pretty bad shape, but he is apparently fighting. And then this, I'll tell you what, man, surround yourself with good people, because otherwise you might have this happen. Jose Fortes Rodriguez, who is apparently Raiola's, like, one of his right-hand people, was in Holland, and he said, quote, he is in a bad position, but he hasn't died. Like, just kind of
very,
like,
succinct and to the point.
Yeah, it's just like, he's in a bad, he hasn't died. But he's, yeah, it's okay. So no beating around the bush there.
First of all, I don't want to make light of the situation.
No, like, of course not. We're not making light of anything. And by the way, when this podcast comes out, you may have heard that there is worse news that he has passed on. And we obviously, as much as he's like this super agent, and I'm sure he has such a crazy situation going on right now with people tweeting, you know, weird accounts of whether or not he's dead. Obviously, if something happens to him and he does pass away, and even whatever he's going through right now, we hope he makes it through it. If he is, in fact, not dead, but What a weird situation.
Like, it's just, it's so wild to me, the fact that, like, you know, the players that he represents are obviously some of the biggest names in the sport. And you mentioned them, some of them, Paul Pogba and Romelu Lukaku, Erling Haaland and all this. Like, does this seem like a transfer saga? Like, as stupid as that sounds to say, it seems like it's like, oh, he's going here, he's going there. It's like, how has this turned itself into its own saga? Like,
I know, right?
It's nuts, man.
I think what you're hitting on there is like silly season knows no mortal bounds. Like, this is like a silly season rumor of like, is
right,
he going or
saying.
Staying like with X team, except the team is life right now. And that's so, it's so weird and bizarre and odd sometimes how, I guess when you do a certain profession, like certain aspects of your own health can mimic that profession. Cause that's just, you're right. It's a weird analogy of like what he actually does for a living is now what apparently the same media that reports on the things he did for a living is now reporting on his life in the same way. And that's such a trivial way to cover a man's life, right? It's just like the deal's done, he's gone, expired. And it's like, no, actually not done. And it's like, wait, we're talking about a man's life here. We're not talking about whether or not Erling Haaland's joining a Premier League team. I mean, like, those are important news stories. They're not nearly as important as a person living or dying. So
yeah, it was just, I mean, it was so wild when I'm scrolling Twitter and I send it to a couple of buddies who, you know, are fans of the game and obviously know who Mino Raiola is. And I'm like, holy crap, man. Like, this is crazy news. Like, I knew nothing about this, like that his health was in poor shape. And then literally 20 minutes later, it's like, no, he's okay. I mean, he's fighting for his life, but he's alive. I'm like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
It's such a weird story.
It is such a weird thing. Are you aware of the humble beginnings of one Mino Raiola and him too? Mino Raiola. Do you know about his backstory?
He like worked at a restaurant, didn't he?
He worked at his parents' pizza place is what he started out doing. And just from there, he was a multilingual guy who was able to, you know, turn that into opportunities for himself. But like at 17 years old, he started helping out with like Dutch companies, kind of like working deals with them somehow because he just loved business and figured this all out. He claims, don't know, again, we are talking right now about a man who may or may not be dead.
Yep.
And his own Twitter claims he is not dead, while like other people are claiming he is. This man also has claimed that he was a millionaire before he reached the age of 20.
Good.
But then, you know, this was a thing. So like he moved to Amsterdam, which is, I guess, where he's kind of centered out of now. But obviously he has Italian heritage. And anyway, the point being, this guy was a business savant, or has been a business savant, and it led to him working and becoming the super agent for, like, I mean, literally, Erling Haaland. I know this is trivial comparatively to his own life, but that's going to be one of the biggest stories this summer is what's happening with Haaland.
Correct.
It's
the biggest story. Yeah.
Right. And this is the man who's going to broker that deal, we hope, for his sake, you know? But, yeah, it's just such a weird... It sums up the soccer following experience,
yes.
I guess,
yes,
put
it
on a macro level, not to trivialize his current health situation. But this is literally what we see every day when you follow soccer is this is happening. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, wait, but the deals aren't working. Like, this is all we ever hear about in soccer. And now one of the guys who helps frame that and bring that to its existence is now kind of the subject of that same machine, I guess. So, yeah, we wish him the best and hope for good health for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's no doubt one of the most polarizing figures in world soccer, one of the most influential people in world soccer.
Sure,
right?
Sure,
I mean,
you could
say all of that. So it's just, I don't know, man. It was a pretty wacky morning. My head was spinning a million miles an hour. I can't imagine what he's going through and what his family's going through dealing with. I mean, let alone how you're doing personally in your health and then the entire backstorm of people trying to kill you off and say that I don't know. I don't even know how to comprehend this.
I gotcha. It's a very weird situation for sure. All right. So let's talk about some Champions League stuff. No doubt some of his clientele were on the field in these games, Mino Raiola's, but let's discuss Manchester City versus Real Madrid.
Jesus Christ. That's all I have to say.
He himself was probably like me. Like this watching this game, he's just he's just taking his own name. Yes. He's like, this is insane. So if you missed this game, it was started off looking like Manchester City was about to rout Real Madrid.
Which isn't a thing that happens much.
No, not a thing that happens, in, especially in these big... This is a semifinal game, right? I mean, you're one of four teams left. These tend to be some of the toughest, most physical games that you're going to see in Champions League.
But it also leads your, at least me, going into semifinals, a big cup contest. And I don't know the way that you perceive it, but the way that I perceive the first 45 minutes usually going is going to be a team knowing that they have 180 minutes to figure something out. The first 45 minutes of the first leg are usually kind of just poking and prodding and seeing how teams react. And that was not the case on Tuesday.
No. Kevin De Bruyne gets one barely 2 minutes into the game. I mean, it was
ridiculous.
This is
the earliest goal ever scored in a Champions League knockout game, I think.
I think that's correct. I don't remember for sure, but it's got to be in the
top five.
There's
not much time. Yeah, there's not much time that you can do it before that.
Like you said, I mean, it's just not typically it's guys knocking the ball around for the first 5 minutes just to even kind of get into the game. Before you're talking, like you said, the first half is treated like a quarter, and it's treated like, let's just feel each other out. Let's see where the weak points are. Let's strategize. Let's not give too much away. Let's certainly not get down a goal. And then instead, Real Madrid goes down 2 minutes, not even 2 minutes into the game.
Blink of an eye.
Yeah. And then Manchester City doubles the lead with Gabriel Jesus coming in. And
by the way, how good has he been lately?
Fantastic, right? Yeah. Like, this. I mean, now, I was not watching this game live. I was. It was on because it was on when I'm doing the afternoon show. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking up, and I look up, and I see it's 1-0 already. I'm like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
That's
wow.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Then I see it's 2-0. I'm like, oh, holy hell. Like, this is insane. So I start kind of paying a little more attention as we're in the commercial breaks. I'm looking up, and I see Manchester City up 2-0. I'm like, all right, this is going to be a tall task for Real Madrid, right? But Karim Benzema,
of course,
who has been playing like,
the best striker in the world.
He has been playing like the best scorer in the world, I'll even say. Not just best striker, just pure scorer out of wherever. Take anybody you want to put in that mix. He's been as good as anyone over this last few months. He gets gets a goal back, makes it 2-1, and then you get to halftime. You think, all right, 2-1 for Real Madrid. They can come out, get another goal, tie this up. That's not bad. Going back to Madrid, that would be a nice score if they.
It would be 2-2. A win because the way that City played in the first 45 minutes, they should have been out of sight. Like this,
right? Yes,
this two-leg affair should have been over. Madrid, Real Madrid were on their heels for the entire 45 minutes. Get the goal out of nowhere.
Like, Benzema's
like Mendy whips that ball and just like Benzema's up there somewhere. It's kind of like the football thing when Patrick Mahomes is back in the pocket. He's like screw it, Tyreek Hill's down there somewhere. Like it was kind of the equivalent of that. Like just cross it into the box and see what happened. Benzema wraps his foot around it. He's able to put it on net. Like 2-1. This game T-Bone should have been 5-0 at one point.
Right.
Like, they were missing out. Mahrez had a couple of great opportunities. Phil Foden had a couple of great opportunities that were missed. And Real were just on their heels for the entire 45 minutes, which was awesome because it led you to unbelievable soccer. And Real Madrid, of course, on the counterattacker, one of the most dangerous teams on the planet. But really, you could feel in the building and just us watching on TV, like, you're like, I need all of this that I could possibly pump into my system. Like at this point heading into halftime, you're like, this, whatever's going to happen in the next 45 minutes, you could tell was going to be phenomenal.
Oh yeah. It was, you thought it was going to be pretty great soccer, right? And then Phil Foden comes out and gets one, which now I'd like every England player that I watch, I'm just like, oh, that's we're gonna have to deal with him too. Huh? Like, that's going to be a whole other thing for the U.S. national team coming up in the fall. But
that guy, baller.
Yeah, he's a baller for sure. So Phil Foden gets it to 3-1, and then that's where my brain was like, all right, now Real Madrid is done.
Yep.
Now they're done. Now this is not happening. They're good, right? And no, there was much more soccer left to play.
Yeah,
this game was insane.
Yeah,
just absolutely insane the whole way.
John Stones comes off. I believe it was Fernandinho comes in, and for the most part, he does a pretty good job defending. Now, the only problem for him is man-marking Vinicius over on that left wing.
Yeah,
like that, that's going to be
he's
a bit,
one you got to mark.
That's going to be a bit of a mismatch for you. So they're both closing down on a ball that's on the far sideline. And they're both closing down on it. And Vinicius has this ungodly flick where he just, touches it on maybe 2 inches, just deflects it a little bit, goes right between the legs of City's defender. He's off. Like, he's off to the races. He's gone. Poof. And he's running down. You see Benzema, and I'm not sure who was running with him on the other side, like the far post. And anyways, he just decides to keep it, tucks it past City. So now it's 3-2, and you're like, oh my God, game on again. Like, this is unbelievable what we're watching. Like, yeah. And then in the meantime, between that goal and Phil Foden's last goal, City should have scored another 3 times and have been out of sight.
Well,
I'm like, Carlo Ancelotti had to make some sort of blood pact with the devil to keep them out of the net this many times.
Right. Well, that's something that, and we can talk about this more at the end of discussing this game, because part of what struck me about this was the amount of chances that Manchester City had to bury this and be done and say, all right, it's good. We're going to win going away. And the second leg is almost a formality at this point. Instead, they just couldn't capitalize on their chances where they could have put this team away. And then you get one of, I'm going to say, one of the most ballsy moments.
Yeah.
You just called, Phil Foden a baller. I'll say this was ballsy, but Karim Benzema gets a penalty, gets the chance to bury a penalty, right? Mm-hmm. What does this man do? Down, what is it? I'm trying to keep track of all my scores here, right? That would have made it, that was 4-2.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the Bernardo Silva goal.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Of course. Like, I'm just saying, this is a situation where you pretty much have to hit this penalty.
Yeah, you've got
to
score. It's the 82nd minute or 81st or something.
And he walks up and delivers a Panenka and just says, all right.
You want to know the best part about
that? I'm playing as good as I can, and I'm just going to do this, and who cares?
The best part about that penalty, with him stepping up and hitting a Panenka at the Etihad in a Champions League semifinal, is he missed 2 penalties on the weekend.
He's missed 3 this month. Right. Like, we just talked, and I still say he's playing as good as anyone.
Of course he is.
Imagine if he buried all those. Like, you're right. He missed 2 this weekend. He's missed 3 this month. And it was enough that I saw Alan Shearer, who, of course, has scored some goals in his day, right? All-time leading scorer in the Premier League. He was on BBC Sport talking about this. And he said, after missing 3 penalties this month, all I can do is chuckle and think, I cannot believe Karim Benzema has just done that. The sheer arrogance of it, but also the belief and the ability to do that. He seems to be getting better and better. The sheer audacity. It was incredible. I mean... I've heard Alan Shearer talk quite a bit. If you've ever watched him play, I mean, the guy was kind of like, looked like the type of dude who would finish off a game, wipe his nose on his sleeve, and then grab a pint at the bar. Like, didn't strike me as
at
much
the bar.
Of a...
Give me one right as I'm walking off the field. Give me a cigarette, too.
Crack one. Yeah, exactly. Like, a no-nonsense, like, I'm
a
just here for the...
A real rough lad at the pub.
Yeah, I'm here for the goals and the beers and the babes, and that's it. Like, that's all he's, And instead,
taking
he's
the playbook
like,
out of George Best playbook.
Right. And and you've got him like gushing, like the sheer audacity. It was incredible. Like, it's awesome, man. Like, that's what Benzema has been this year. 41 goals in 41 Jeez. Games. I don't know if he's blackmailing any of his teammates anymore or not, but that's a whole nother.
Sorry, Matthew Valbuena.
Jeez, dude. That seems like that happened when he was old. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like what that scandal from, I think it started in like 2015, 2016.
It's a long time
ago. It seems at that time he was still in his prime, but it was like, he's getting a little up there. He's kind of aging a bit. And then all that's happened. He's gone through all that He deserves to have gone through if he truly did that. He's been punished for it, all these other things.
Yeah, he
kicked
just
off the French national
like he's
team.
He's being tried for it like right now. Like,
is it still on trial? Okay.
It was years ago when it happened, and apparently it just got to trial, and he was just found guilty of it last few months.
November, it looks like he was found guilty of it. He was handed a 1-year suspended jail sentence and fined about $84,000, which he has in his couch cushions.
Yeah.
But still, like, he plans to appeal this, and he says it no way in reality corresponds with the event, whatever. The point is, mm-hmm. whether he did this or not, that was a scandal that lasted for years. And I remember thinking at the time, that guy's old, like then. And now he's scored 41 and 41. He's hitting Panenka's in Champions League semifinals
on the road.
Yeah, like he's doing anything and everything you want as far as a player goes. Just unreal. But let me ask you this, Beamer: how much of this do you view as Real Madrid not giving up and like that whole way that we talk about sports of, man, they just powered through and mm-hmm. found a way and they didn't give up? Or do you view this as Manchester City, who view themselves rightfully so as this team that's better than everyone else, kind of giving this one away, even though they won it? They won the game, but in reality, this thing is so not over going back to Madrid. And I would feel like if I'm Manchester City, I've wasted an opportunity to bury this team.
Yeah, I think you can play both sides of the coin here. I firmly believe that Manchester City pissed it away. Like, now you're in for a dogfight. 90 minutes heading to the Bernabeu, it's not going to be an easy task, even though you have a one-goal lead. And the way that you play, I don't know, on your best day, if any team in the world can keep up with you. So you look at the first Benzema goal, maybe unlucky. Unbelievable pass, unbelievable goal that they scored. Then you look at the Vinicius play. Okay, Fernandinho, he's in the wrong spot. He has a ball dribble right through his legs. Vinicius with a great shot. And then the penalty, like, yeah, it's obvious handball. You know, went off the head. Hand is away from the body. Like, it's going to be called a penalty every time, especially now in the day of VAR. So I think, on one hand, Madrid played well enough to score the goals. And obviously City did too, because they won the game. But the amount of chances that City had and did not put in the net honestly could come back to haunt them. I mean, last time I checked, Manchester City doesn't have a Champions League under their belt, and that's the golden goose that Pep is after. And so I don't know. Like, it goes back to the old adage, like, are you scared to be great? Are you scared to be great? And so now you have a 90-minute cup tie, which, by the way, may be one of the most watched games in Champions League history for a semifinal. No doubt. It's got everything you want. It's a competitive game, and the way that these two teams lend themselves to playing. I think it was more on the Man City blew it than it was more Real Madrid plucky and, you know, great comeback story. And I think that's part of it. But I think it's more of Manchester City blowing their opportunities, not necessarily giving up three goals to Real Madrid, but the chances that you did not put in the back of the net may come back to haunt you.
Yeah, totally, totally agree with that. I am, if I'm a Manchester City fan, I'm not comfortable right now.
No, God, no.
I'm feeling very nervous about next week. I'm feeling very concerned. And I'm thinking we had the opportunity to now get this one done. Pretty much play a, you know, imagine if you're up in that game, some like finish one of those chances and you go up,
it could have been 4-2,
it could have been 5-2,
it could have been, well, 5-0.
Right. I mean, I think it's even with all that, it's reasonable to say 5-2 is where your expectation should have been for this game. And all that is a difference in a goal that's not having that penalty, and that's scoring one of your billion chances you blew, right?
Yeah.
That's the difference between 4-3 and nervy and 5-2 and
feeling really good.
Yeah. We've got a really good chance.
Shit happens. We know that.
Yes, of course.
But you feel better at 5-2 than you do at 4-3.
Of course. Now you go this weekend, you got to play Leeds, and then it's right back to Madrid, and you've got, I mean, and oh, by the way, Liverpool's right on your heels. Like, mm-hmm. it's not over there.
And by the way, John Stones got that little injury thing hanging out. Yeah. Who's going to mark Karim Benzema, and you're still fighting for a league title. Like,
yeah, of course, this is extremely nervous times is where I would put, that's where I would rate this if I were for Manchester City, but I'm not. So I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm going to get
cheering for the underdogs in Real Madrid in this.
Those
10-time, 11-time European champion.
Yeah.
One of the most titles of any team. I'm cheering for the underdogs. Let's go Los Blancos.
Well, speaking of the one team I think you can point to as the actual underdogs and all four of these that are left, Villarreal, I'm sure everybody who wasn't rooting for Liverpool was rooting for them, but it was a close. I mean, let me back up. Real Madrid lost by a goal. Manchester City won that game by a goal, however you want to look at that. Liverpool only wins by two goals, but to me, like, without a doubt, Villarreal was more outclassed in that game.
Yes,
than Madrid was Manchester. You know what I mean? Like, I know 2-0 versus a one goal win, you'd say, well, duh, of course Liverpool was better, but that scoreline doesn't really do it justice. Liverpool dominated Villarreal in pretty much every way in that game, I felt like.
Well, they did, and really, so what I was talking about, the first 45 minutes of a semifinal over a two-leg affair, that's kind of what the first 45 minutes was like for the Liverpool-Villarreal matchup. And then you get the goals, bang, bang, like own goal, another goal, within, what, 2 minutes of each other? 2.5 minutes, something like that?
That's right.
And then it's like, Liverpool's good. They're just going to do what they do and then possess the ball and create chances when they have. We're not going to press. We understand that a 2-0 advantage for us going on the road into the next game is fine. So, like, within that four-minute time span of them getting two goals, it was over. Like, done. Game's over. If we get another goal, great. We're not really pressing and trying to get another one. It's fine. We'll hold on to the ball. We like our chances in the second leg. That seems like it's done. Like, over the two-leg contest, I don't see Villarreal being able to get back into this at all.
No, I really don't either. And I think it's a sad story in that sense that I wanted to see both of these be, like, really epic series. We know that, you know, comebacks can happen, but...
Just look at the firepower.
Yeah, man, I thought if Villarreal was going to have a chance, I thought they had to keep it like 0-0, 1-1, something like that.
Even 1-0. Like,
1-0 would be fine, too.
Get a goal going back home, and then maybe you're feeling good and you play for penalties. But that second goal, it's what do you do?
Right. I mean, I think it wouldn't even surprise me if Villarreal found a way to score two goals, you know, or even three. I just feel like whatever they do, Liverpool's, if they score two, Liverpool will get one. If they score three, Liverpool will get two.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like it won't be a problem for Liverpool to pull back what they need to and get out of there with a win and move on. I don't expect it to go to penalties or anything like that. I definitely think you've got much more potential for that in whatever kind of crazy hellhole we're going to see from Manchester City.
By the way,
Real Madrid, that's going to be so fun.
I just want to say I am so happy that Atletico Madrid is out. Like, I've watched them for the last month, and we talked about a lot what happened in their last game against City in the dust-up.
Yeah.
And whatever kind of magic that, you know, black magic that Diego Simeone possesses and just puts on a soccer field. That game between Manchester City and Real Madrid may have been one of the most fun, best games I've ever watched.
You are right.
And then you go back and you watch the way the Atletico play. I mean, yeah, entertaining in its own right because it's just a giant shit fest.
But no, I know what you mean. We wouldn't be talking about a really fun game.
The way that was played on Tuesday afternoon, as a neutral spectator leaning towards one, but just hoping that the game is good, right?
Right.
It was the best game that you could possibly ask for compared to 180 minutes and only one goal being scored. Like it was that good.
Yeah, it was truly just a really good day to watch soccer, and sadly I was doing my like other job, which is extremely fun, but I was doing the on-air part of my job where I'd rather be just sitting there watching soccer and talking about it with you. At least when that type of game is on, that's always fun. But one thing to bring out from that Liverpool game that we said we're going to mention, I almost forgot to, Sadio Mane was talking about the fact that he, among other players in world soccer right now, are playing through Ramadan. I don't know if that's the right way to say that. I definitely don't want to sound like I'm being disrespectful. I respect what
playing
he and
during
others,
Ramadan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I'm not, you know, I made it almost sound like you're playing through an ankle injury or something. Like, it's something with Ramadan where you're fasting throughout the day. So you've seen this a few different places where players, like, there was a game that was stopped a week or two ago at like the 70th minute or something like that because darkness had fallen during the game and sunset occurred and there was a player, a Muslim player, who was practicing Ramadan and they stopped the game so he could get some, you know, like a protein bar or some, you know, protein gel,
energy,
something that like, yeah, gave him something because he had been playing fasted. And I just think we're not talking enough about how, you know, Sadio Mane is playing while being on a fast. You think about all the performance, everything that we do nowadays, athletes are like constantly monitored for how much are you sleeping,
how much are you hydrated.
Hydration. And then it's like for religious reasons and let you live on that. But it's still amazing that players are saying, I know I should be doing all these other things, but I'm going to forego that for my religion and still go out and play at an elite level. That is pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And the comments that he said, I thought it was an unbelievable job by Jurgen Klopp who's understanding the situation, Mo Salah being another one who is going through Ramadan,
sure.
Is that, you know, he came to me, he's like, listen, you know, we've got a fast during the day, which you can't eat or drink anything. So it's nothing from sunup to sundown. You have a meal and you have drinks, you know, water, whatever, before the sun rises. And then, of course, after the sun goes down, and he approached Jurgen Klopp, did Sadio Mane, and he said, coach, can we have practices? Can we do training in the morning? And that way we're able to, you know, rest and throughout the day. And I give a lot of credit to Jurgen Klopp saying, we're going to do whatever you need to do to make yourself as comfortable as possible. And Jurgen Klopp obliged. And apparently Liverpool, during Ramadan, has been having early morning training sessions where they can get that out of the way, where the players feel comfortable doing that. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to equate everything in coaching to parenting, because I don't think it's the same relationship. It's not the same vibe. But just in generalities, like, you know, there's people who talk about being a player's coach, or is this guy, yeah, you know, right. Is he like a hard ass, or is he a player's coach? Jurgen Klopp is not, I don't think he is just a pushover, and I don't think he is just a guy who is all fun and games all the time, right? I think he is a guy who can at times be stern and say, no, we're not doing this, or I don't like how that's going, this needs to change. But I think in some ways that's where the similarity is to parenting. Like, there are times where you have to be the coach. There are times where you have to be the parent, and you have to, you know, kind of set your foot down and say, no, we're not going to allow this or that or that.
And there are sometimes you can be the friend.
Yeah, they're right. It's not like you always have to be a stick in the mud parent or a stick in the mud coach, but you don't always have to be the one that's, you know, like, hey, candy, roller coasters, yay, yeah. There's no responsibilities. Like,
right.
I think being able to listen, and that goes for being a boss, that goes for being a parent, goes for being, you know, just anyone who's kind of in charge of looking after other people and, you know, in some leadership capacity.
Not me, buddy. I'm on E Street.
Well, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Hey, you and you've got it's again not the same thing. You got a dog. You got to, you know,
I'm responsible
you gotta,
for
you
him.
Play, right? But no, I'm just saying, like, as a coach, I think there are times where you do have to realize I could say no exceptions. We don't, or you could look at your players and say this is extremely important to a few of the players on my team,
yeah.
And it's not going to hurt anything otherwise. Let's try to make everyone comfortable here in a way that makes sense. I think it also helps that some of the players asking you to do this are stars. I mean, they are some of the biggest players in the world, but it's still worth noting that Jurgen Klopp didn't say, no, that's not, there's no exceptions. No,
right.
Now make exceptions sometimes. It's okay. It's good. But I think that speaks to his leadership and why he is so good at what he does. So just a little interesting sidebar there. Don't forget Premier League, that too. That's coming this weekend. Champions League games, though, it's reverse, right? So the Villarreal Liverpool game is on Tuesday next week, and then Wednesday is the one I think we're all waiting for. That is going to be one epic one between Real Madrid and Manchester City.
I don't know if I've ever looked forward to a Manchester City game more than I'm looking forward to this. Like, for sure, when United play them, I'm like, I'm disgusted. I don't even want to watch
this. Well, you're looking forward to it, but you're nervous about it. This one, you're just
looking forward to watching it.
It's going to be amazing.
This is great. Yeah.
Right. I totally understand. We will take a break. We will come back, and we will talk about the crew trading one of the faces of the franchise. What does that mean? Where are they going next? We'll talk about it when we come back. You're listening to Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village. Welcome back to Bone and Beam United, brought to you by Zaftig Italian Village. One more thing, talking about Champions League before we move on to the crew stuff.
Yeah.
I saw a couple numbers that I found interesting. Awful Announcing, which I read and I think is a worthwhile read for anybody who likes to keep up on the business side of
sports.
Shout out
Ben Koo.
Yeah, Ben Koo's the dude, man. I love following that guy on Twitter. I'd love to pick his brain sometime about how, like, he built Awful Announcing and all that stuff, but yeah. Very cool dude. From all accounts, have you met?
No.
Ben Koo? Oh, see,
just a nice guy online.
Yeah, seems like a very nice guy online. So whatever.
Internet
anyway,
stranger.
Maybe we need to invite him out to Zaftig and hoist some beers and chat. But anyway, I like Awful Announcing, and I don't blame him for writing the highlight or the article this way. It said NHL regular season TV ratings across TNT, ESPN, and ABC up double digits year over year, highest in 5 years. Mm-hmm. This is being talked about as and not just by Awful Announcing, but by Sports Business Journal reporting that the NHL, hey, numbers are back, because, you know, now they're off NBC and NBC Sports Network, which doesn't exist. They moved over to Turner and ESPN, and that's been viewed as a good thing for the NHL. But you go down and read through the numbers, they averaged on national broadcast 361,000 viewers. Pretty good. That's up 29% from what NBC Sports Network drew last season. Now, a lot of those games were behind closed doors, all that stuff. I went and looked up just what are the numbers for, you know, MLS games. Mm-hmm. Right now, last year, which was viewed as like a down year for them in the numbers, they were drawing 300,000 people per broadcast.
Okay.
So not far off from what the NHL is drawing now in this like, ooh, growth year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so far this year, I want to say through the early part of 2022, there have been numbers significantly above 300,000 people for these national broadcasts that have been happening with MLS games. Now, maybe I've got that wrong. Maybe I've read something different than what was actual. Either way, the point I want to make is, like, Champions League, I looked at what their numbers were. These are for games that were in, you know, middle of the day, yeah, but on CBS.
3 o'clock, 4 o'clock starts.
Sure, right.
2 o'clock, whatever.
The numbers they were doing, here's Atletico Madrid versus Manchester United, that game that I'm sure you watched and mm-hmm. hated to watch.
Yep.
856,000 people.
Ooh.
Chelsea versus Lille. 777,000 people. PSG versus Real Madrid. No doubt, a great game, right? 769,000 people watched that game. Milan versus Inter Milan versus Liverpool, 727,000 people. I'm just pointing out, like, MLS is not the number one brand in soccer,
mm-hmm.
and it's doing about what the NHL does.
Yeah.
The brands that are the number one brands, Champions League, Premier League, World Cup, far surpass what the NHL does on a given day.
And that's US TV numbers, correct?
Those are, yeah, yeah. I'm giving you, those are not, yeah, well, worldwide, yeah, it's in the billions of people, yes, probably watching these games. But it's but it's in the US alone, in the middle of the day.
Right.
When it's usually soap operas, they're getting almost, you know, 750,000, over almost 1 million viewers for that Madrid Manchester United. And I guarantee you,
oh God, I can't,
we
imagine,
haven't seen the numbers for the, like, yeah, what that game was this weekend that we were just talking about, mm-hmm. with City and Madrid, or Madrid, yeah, and, yeah, Real Madrid, them too, right? Like, that's that. I think the numbers for next week's games will
it'll be a monster.
At least for the Wednesday game, it should be a monster game. But anyway, I just pointing out, like, MLS is, you know, by far the third or fourth viewing option for most people in this country when it comes to soccer, and it's doing NHL numbers. You add into that what Champions League does and all those others, it's not even close. Soccer's your fourth sport. Just let's stop talking. Now that the NHL's not fun, I like watching the NHL, but that's not the fourth sport in America anymore.
Sounds like you hate hockey.
It is pro soccer. Fine. Well, if it comes to hockey or soccer, no question. Like, there's no doubt what I like more. But yeah, I mean, I love watching the Blue Jackets, but ask me if I'm going to sit down and just watch like a random Yotes versus Jets game.
Oh,
fuck out of here.
I can't tell you two players.
No chance. Well, I know one of them's PLD.
Yep.
That's it. I know Pierre-Luc Dubois. That's the only, there you go.
That's what we got. That's about it. Ekblad, is that a guy for the Yotes?
Is Biflin?
Dustin Byfuglien?
Is he playing for the Jets,
man? Hey, man, you're asking the wrong
guy.
Well,
we do work in sports. We should know something. Well, we don't.
I don't know anything about the Winnipeg Jets.
That's
okay.
True enough.
Sorry.
Fair enough. All right. Let's talk about the Crew. Let's talk about Jossie Zardes. He goes out to Colorado in a trade for your favorite thing, Beamer. We got some Gam.
Gam Meister.
Talking about the Gam. Hot Gam. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, Jossie has not been playing up to the standard that we all hope for him.
He has also not been playing, really.
No. Right. I mean, he was playing in spot duty this year. Who knows, you know, what he would have been scoring like if he was given more of a chance.
Maybe hopefully scoring at all would be nice.
Well, true.
He did score in the Detroit City game. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last goal scored by the Crew.
Yeah, it is, against a team that beat them in Open Cup despite being a lesser side.
Yep.
So, whew, that's bad. But the Crew did get a point over the weekend because they had a 0-0 draw, which this is how you're going to have to get points right now, is just by making sure no one scores ever, being the most boring team in the league. I really don't know where they're going to get offense from right now, other than Lucas El Rayon.
That's it. That's the
whole thing. You're going to have clean sheets, put all the stress on the defense in the midfield, and hope that El Rayon can just go out there and get you like a banger and win 1-0. Like, that's pretty much what you've got here. But
that's your hope. That's your strategy.
So
is that your strategy right now, as we sit here on what day is it? April 28th, the 2022nd year, yeah. Is that your hope and your strategy is that Lucas Zelarayán is going to be the best player on the field and your defense gives up no goals. Like, that's the reality that's of the situation that you're in right now.
Yeah, it is. And I don't, I understand that the crew are saying, well, we got back allocation money. Mm-hmm. They got $300,000 in GAM.
And that's coming over money. Like 100%. That's guaranteed.
That's guaranteed.
And you
it
have
could
some,
rise to yeah, another ahead. Million plus could come, 1.4 million total could be there if certain incentives are reached by Jossie Zardes with the Rapids. So I did see, by the way, you know, the Nuggets were in the playoffs in the NBA.
Neighbor Eric has no clue who that is.
Yeah, well, Denver is where Colorado plays. Mm-hmm. They had Jossie. They have like a big drum, I guess, that they hit for like, cool. You know, certain, you know, like a get the crowd going and stuff. And yeah. The mascot was there. They introduced Jossie at the Nuggets playoff game.
That's awesome.
Like, I mean, he got the royal treatment, like, welcome to Denver. Like, glad you're here. That's, I'm telling you, man, I think that's pretty cool. And I love the fact that the pro teams in that city do that. And I will say the Jackets and crew have done a good job of starting to, you know, rub elbows more and handshakes and high fives. And that's cool. I think the more of that you can do, the better. I think it's great. But I'm saying Jossie's going to have a chance to go there and stay in the national team picture. That's why he's over there. You know what I mean? Like, I think the crew were pretty much saying, we're going to go with Miguel Berry yep. this year. And I think if Jossie... I'm sure he would have liked to stay in Columbus. From all accounts, he likes it here. Hopefully, he'll come back here. I remember seeing like some Instagram videos he posted of his son playing soccer, and let's hope that kid comes back in place mm-hmm. for the Crew Academy, and maybe get him, you know, playing for the Crew down the road. Keep it in the family. But nah, man, I wish Jossie nothing but the best. But how are you going to score goals until you get some replacement in here? That's the real question for me.
All right, so this was an honest conversation that I had, and I believe it was, when did we find this out? Last Friday, maybe? Okay. Friday morning, Friday yeah. afternoon, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Meredith and I come home from having some dinner, having some drinks, and I see neighbor Eric. He's out in the driveway, and I'm pretty sure he was just waiting for me to get home, stalking me like a lunatic that he is. And so I'm walking.
I already can see where this is going.
I'm walking into the house. He's like, oh man, Gios, you know, Gios, it's tough to lose him. And going through his whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, you know, who do you think we're bringing in? We got some GAM out of the whole thing. He was like, honest question. I don't watch much European soccer. It's just, I'm more MLS guy. I'm like, I know.
Right.
I'm aware. Been your neighbor for 2 years.
It's all good. Yeah.
We picked your brain on this before. And he was like, but that guy for Bayern, he's got to be old, right? Like, how much do you think he's worth? And I'm like, who are you talking about? The guy for Bayern. It's like, the big guy for Bayern. And I'm like, are you talking about Robert Lewandowski? He goes, yeah, Robert Lewandowski. He seems like he's going to be moving on at some point from Bayern, and he's going to go somewhere else. Like, he's talked about wanting to leave. Like, well, how much could he possibly cost? And I was just like, Eric, Robert Lewandowski is on the move to Barcelona. The guy might be old, but I'm pretty sure that the last time that I checked, Barcelona and Columbus Crew are two different powers in the game of soccer. Like, is this an honest thing that's coming out of your mouth? And he was like, well, I don't know how much he was worth. And I'm like, you are absolutely batshit crazy for this. And I'm like, I start going down the list, and I'm like,
Eric,
yeah.
The Columbus Crew may have actually made more profit over the last couple years than did Barcelona, given the finances involved. But yes, your point is well taken. Like, that's not realistic.
I was just like, Eric, I love you. We got to pump the brakes.
I love it, though, man. I love the optimism, though.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that's where I come down a lot more often is, why not? As opposed to that'll never happen, I tend to be more like, why can't it happen?
Well, that here's reason A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, Y.
Right. That does get you in trouble when you actually look at the logic behind it, because it's not likely. But I appreciate where neighbor Eric's coming from.
I do, too. He's a beauty.
Crew first, everything else second. And I love that about him, and that's great. The reality is this. The Crew have to have they don't make this move, even if, yes, Jossie wasn't going to start, and even if, I'm sure he probably said to them, like, look, man, do right by me. Let me have a chance to play in the World Cup.
And there's nothing wrong
with that. Let me go
try
to start somewhere. But I can't imagine they do all that and go, well, all right, who's out there?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
let's fire up Google.
So there was a couple tweets I saw from Keith Noss, who nothing on the internet passes through the internet without Keith Noss being aware of it.
He is Zool. He is the is the gatekeeper.
He looks at it, he sees it, he decides if it's good or bad, and then he passes it on to us. And so one of the things I saw him directing people to was a few reports coming out of Argentina about an Estudiantes forward named Gustavo Del Prete, or Prete. I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name. Anyway, Gustavo is a 25-year-old, soon-to-be 26-year-old forward who plays for Estudiantes.
Okay.
He wears their 10 shirt. So he
just got there too, right?
Yeah, he spent the last couple years playing in the second division for Montevideo City Torca, who play in, like I said, the second division in Uruguay. So that's a bit of a move up, right? From second division in Uruguay to top division in Argentine football, soccer. Well, he hasn't been there very long, but in 33 games, he scored 12 goals.
Pretty good.
We'll take that strike rate. And that's in the Argentinian league. I'm sure, you know, I don't know what his how prodigious he would be in MLS with that rate, but that apparently is a guy that the Crew, according to reports in Argentina, offer was made approaching or above $2 million transfer money. Now, again, I don't think that's U.S. dollars. I don't know what the actual price is, but it looks like Estudiantes paid $1 million plus to get him in whatever currency we're discussing here.
Yeah, so I was looking on Transfermarkt and translated this to dollars, and it was $1.1 million U.S. dollars.
Okay, so that's, I mean, you're talking basically double the price that was paid for him last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's what they would have to do. According to the reports, it says the club more or less said, not yet, but maybe this summer. So I don't know. Well, I mean, they're not going to take him off the team right now, I would assume.
I am correct in stating this, the MLS transfer window is open, I believe, until May 7th, right?
I believe you're right.
And
yes, that's correct.
And then it opens back up on the 1st of July with the international window, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is correct. And I think that's,
I don't know the ins and outs of the MLS calendar, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
It might be that there's a chance to get something done and get this dude up here as soon as possible. I don't know. And I can't remember. I want to say Argentina does the Clasura Apertura thing, I believe, right? I think they have the break in the middle of the winter and the summer. And then they don't have the same break as European schedule is what I'm saying. Anyway, that's a deal. That's a big deal to find someone who can score goals. But he is not a big dude. This guy's like 5'10", 5'9". So,
you know who's also that big from Argentina?
Who's that?
Lionel Messi.
He's not that big.
Oh, Lionel Messi's
like 5'5". Five. Yeah, 5'5" or something.
Transfer portal. Transfer window.
Which high schools are you going to come from and transfer? Or which college are you going to go to?
Wouldn't you like to know? Wednesday, May 4th. So it's not May 7th, May 4th.
Okay.
And then your secondary transfer window runs from the 7th of July until August 4th.
All right. Well, overall, I feel like I'm frustrated right now with this Crew team. I am frustrated with the idea that they do not have an answer at forward. Let me be clear. Miguel Berry could still be a really good player for this team and could still bag some goals. I'm not giving up on him. But we said going into this season, they're a little thin at striker.
Yep.
Because outside of Jossie and Miguel Berry, who else you have? Sorry, Eric Hurtado, you're not the guy. And then now we're saying, okay, now they're really thin at striker, and we're just trying to figure out how you're going to play the next couple months till someone gets in here, gets acclimated, gets good and up to speed, and then is able to go.
It would be different if Miguel Berry's scoring loads of goals and your team is humming along, scoring two or three games.
And you say, well, I guess here's the positive on that, if there is a little positive. Do the Crew, if they're going to go out and get a replacement for Jossie Zardes, which let's assume they're replacing the Jossie Zardes that was, not the Jossie Zardes that has been the last few months or late last season, mm-hmm. right? If they're replacing the guy from a couple years ago, you need to go out and get a couple million-dollar guy,
of course,
a DP-level player, and a guy that you can say, yes, this can be another face of the franchise. That's who we're going to have to go out and get. if Miguel Berry is scoring like at a ridiculous clip again, it might be hard to convince that guy to like leave the situation he's in and come here.
Try to win a spot on the team.
And then it's like, well, yeah, but you're going to have to fight for playing time with this guy. Not that players are scared of competition, but you just may not be able to get the same level of striker if you had Miguel Berry going off right now. And who knows if that would last. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I guess in some ways it's kind of good that he's also not got his position secure as the number one guy yet. You bring in someone who possibly can be that player, but as we know, as Crew fans, longtime Crew fans know, for every Lucas El Arayan there or Guillermo Barros Scalotto, there is an Andres Mendoza. And there is a hope and a dream of a player that will come in and then not live up to those expectations. So
Morgan Hughes, favorite player, right? If I'm not misspeaking on that.
I really just wanted to throw that in at the end to see if he listened all the way through this episode. And if he did, I'll see a tweet about it. If not, I'll also not see a tweet about it, and I'll know, and I'll be offended. I think that's about all we need to get into today. We can talk men's national team. They've got a few more games announced. They're going to play Uruguay June 5th in Kansas City. That's cool. That'd be a nice, that's a nice game.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be fun to watch. They're also playing Morocco and Cincinnati on June 1st. So Morocco and Uruguay,
two pretty decent sized big boys there.
And I would think all teams involved will be bringing their best lineups to say, let's see what we've got.
You would hope so.
You have a few months off before the World Cup. This is going to be our last real let's go for it. So I think that's probably what you're going to see. So yeah, but otherwise, anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Just not really looking forward to the Manchester United game today. So that's about
it. Oh yeah, it's Man U and Chelsea, right? That's good.
I'll be down at Zaftig, drowning my sorrows. So.
Well, enjoy the time at Zaftig. I would join you if it wasn't during our work hours.
Yeah, screw it. Who cares?
Yeah, I'll just blow off the show.
Yeah, there could be no possible ramifications with you doing that.
No, none whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
If someone gets mad about it, I'll call up the new digital director and tell him, hey, why don't you go take over for a minute?
Yeah, dummy, you can do this.
Yeah, go do it, dummy. All right. That's it for us. We'll see you next week. Thanks again to Zaftig Italian Village. And until next week, enjoy all the soccer.